fishing, but I'm a predator. Leave the oceans alone, cause yo.
Power in 1972, today, 35 years later, to get the same amount of value, you actually need to spend $5. And our guest today, Susan Bosky, informed me of this. We are in for a big treat today to bring you value of financial information that many of you may not have seen, may not have. So many people are dealing with some financial stress or strain or turning to the ever-present use of plastic credit cards that are helping for temporary stopgap measures but not getting the job done long-term. I want to introduce you a little bit more to some of Susan's background. Now, Susan, true to her baby boomer generation, her life has been answering a special question. What does the world need and want that I can help provide? And in 1979, upon meeting her most significant mentor, some of you may have heard of this gentleman, R. Buckminster Fuller, better known as Bucky to her friends, well, she grew to share his perspective that life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. Let's go for the daring adventure, folks, and listen to what Susan has to share. Well, her daring adventure as a self-styled social entrepreneur took a quantum leap. As a co-producer for the last leg of Bucky's final national speaking tour in 1983, which was called Only Personal Integrity is Going to Count, Susan was able to spend private time with him, and his emphasis on systems thinking inspired her to an independent study of the monetary system to find out why, while money greatly, money's greatly benefited a few, it seemed like it was a headache for most everyone else. Well, the result of her book is this book called The Quality Life Plan. Now, who doesn't want that? Okay, it's a refreshing alternative approach to personal finance strategies based on the whole story about money. I want to make sure there's more to share about Susan, but her information is so important. I want to get right to that immediately and introduce all of you to Susan Bosky. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Happy to be here.
Oh, welcome. Thank you. Thank you. First of all, you'd mentioned there's this book, The Quality Life Plan. So would you help get us started by talking about what is The Quality Life Plan?
Sure. The Quality Life Plan is a program to help the cash-strapped, debt-heavy American reverse that lifestyle for themselves. forever. It's actually a long-term plan where a person can take where they are, which is maybe, you know, seriously involved with credit cards and not having enough money to make ends meet, to turning that around. It's not a quick fix, but it definitely works, as my clients have testified. You see, Ken, in today's economic climate, more and more people need credit just to make ends meet. Living on the edge has become the norm, if you hadn't noticed.
Oh, yeah.
Millions are feeling the squeeze of actually having more money going out of their budgets than coming in. And so what they're doing is using plastic to fill the gap. Now, the TV and credit card industry and financial advisors have told people pretty much that they're the problem. You know, if they would just not spend so much, if they wouldn't, that they need to tighten up their budgets and straighten up, so to speak. And, you know, I think I mentioned to you earlier, that's always true, that being responsible for our personal finances, it will never go out of style. We need to do that. But that's not the whole story. There's, you know, as you mentioned about Bucky Fuller, he taught me to look at systems. And when we're never really taught about money as a function of a monetary system. For example, we're taught about the solar system and how the Earth is part of that system, and you don't really fully understand the Earth until you understand it as part of this solar system in terms of it, you know, its rotation, in terms of light and darkness, all kinds of things.
The influences of other planets.
The influence.
We're part of
the system. That's right. And yet we're never taught about money as a part of a monetary system. And as a result, people are making financial decisions and life decisions, as a matter of fact, without being fully informed. And so they think they are because this information hasn't been widely disseminated. And so many people who are working hard to have a balanced budget in their own personal life are having a very difficult time being able to do so. And what people don't realize is that this system that we call the global monetary system is actually not static. It changes over time. And like you said in the beginning of the show, I went to the, any of your listeners can go to the www.minneapolisfed.org. That's the website for the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis. And I plugged in $1. They said, okay, one, and then you put in the year. I put $1, 1972. It actually came up exactly $4.92. I said $5 because I think that's probably more towards the truth. So what we're talking about is the value of money right now is one-fifth of what it was 35 years ago. So that means people have to put more and more money together just to accomplish the basics. Now, it's not just that they're overspending, and many people are overspending and not dealing with their priorities first, their basics first, etc. There's this other thing that's happening, which is that money is increasingly becoming worth less, far beyond what anyone would have expected. But there it is. It's right out there, public information that is basically underreported.
Yeah, well, it helps us to understand a little bit to keep pace, to keep even when the money, the inflation has been that huge. Essentially, if someone was making $20,000 a year in 1972 to keep the same lifestyle, they would need to be making today $100,000 a year.
That's right.
I mean, and I don't think that has kept pace. Now it's like. Before family, you could raise a family, and the husband would work, and the wife would take care of the home and raise the children. Now it's like husband and wife, sometimes each having two jobs.
Right, and that's and many people make between $7 and $10 an hour before taxes, and they're supposed to do everything, including pay for childcare. Mortgage groceries have gone up over 6% in just the past year. an amazing statistic I've found, because I study this information, is that more than 90 million Americans, that's nearly a third of the entire population, are struggling to make ends meet on incomes that are almost double the official poverty line. And that official poverty line for a family of four is $19,971, so let's say $20,000. So 90 million are struggling on $60,000. You know, that's a little over $5,000 a month, or is that is $5,000 a month before taxes. And, you know, it's just not an easy thing to do. So what my book is about is telling people that because of this change over time in the value of the currency that we use, it means that conventional wisdom that we've learned about the best ways to earn, the best ways to spend, the best ways to save and invest to be able to create financial security, they're outdated. They don't work anymore. To provide the same financial security as in times past. You mentioned the one family income earner. I think of my dad. I grew up in New Jersey in the 50s. My dad was an insurance salesman. He made an average amount of money for those times. We weren't in the upper class. We were clearly the middle class American in the 50s. But my mother didn't work. We had a house that cost $8,000. We were able to take vacations, and my family was able to save money. And we had no credit. We had no credit. So nobody could do that today. You know?
There's very few people that are able to pull that off today.
Yeah. And, so we have to look again at best ways to earn, spend, save, and invest, and in what sequence. Along with one of the really big contexts of my study is helping people to understand that they've been the word wealth and what wealth is has been dumbed down. And so when they begin to understand that wealth is so much more than money, I mean, people do know that. I'm not saying they don't know that, but if you go to the Oxford English Dictionary's definition of wealth, it goes like this. Wealth, number one, the condition of being happy and prosperous, well-being. Two, spiritual well-being. Three, prosperity consisting in the abundance of valuable possessions, especially in great abundance, riches, affluence. So isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
That wealth is actually, yeah, and the first two definitions have to do with personal and spiritual well-being. So what has happened is people have been led to believe that when they have the stuff, then they'll be happy. But what we're seeing is just the opposite. People may put on a good presentation once they walk out their door, but behind closed doors, so many people are suffering right now.
Oh, gosh. And with the power of the advertising and a consumer-oriented society, people are being given messages constantly that they're only one or two or five or ten, some number of purchases away from happiness. If I just bought a few more things, my life would finally work.
I'm going to use that. That's a very good way of saying it. Yeah, and so instead what we see is an increase in money is the number one reason for divorce, you know. We see children being neglected, not necessarily because the families want to neglect their children, but because they have to take more work. You know, they have to have, you know, one, two, three jobs just to be able to attempt to make ends meet. So the children are being raised by strangers and, you know, in many cases, daycares, and the family system doesn't have the strength that it used to. And, people's health, that's the other thing. Just the stress factor is killing people. You know, they don't get much sleep. They're not eating right. You know, and this all has to do with putting the third definition of wealth first.
Sure. And, I mean, that's part of my objective with advancedliving.com is to help provide people some ways to reduce their stress load so that they're thinking more clearly, and yet you bring to, you know, it can manage their lives better. And of course, what you're bringing to the table is one of these key things. You know, things you're telling us, things have changed. We live in a different economic climate. Now, I'm curious because, you know, we've all had conventional wisdom about, you know, how to best earn, spend, save, and invest now, but I'm getting the idea that these things are out of date.
That's right. Most people at regular jobs, for example, the whole idea of, you know, working for a company your whole life is now really needs reexamination as just a basic assumption. Just on the premise alone, Ken, that pensions are disappearing. So retirement, you know, has become a do-it-yourself proposition by and large for people.
Yeah.
Unless you work for the government, you know, or, you know, have a university or a school system, you know, your pension is really at risk. You know,
yeah, most people seem to be downsized or given their freedom prematurely from the rigors of work, so that a lot of these companies aren't coming through with their retirement plans.
That's right,
they don't have to offer certain benefits.
Right, and more of them are going to the self-funded options. And so that makes one have to think, okay, way back, let's go back to the 50s again. One of the reasons that people had, you know, this financial security is they worked for a company for 30 years, 35 years, and at the end of that time, they get this pension for the rest of their life. You know, my dad worked for Prudential Insurance Company. He retired when he was 55, and like I said, he wasn't a manager even. He was an insurance salesman. And at that time, he got a lifetime pension. He hasn't worked since then. He's been fine. And nobody can do that now, you know? So it makes you wonder, what's the point of going to work for a company if you're not going to have this kind of security in your later years? It's really, go ahead.
Yeah, well, like you're saying, it's sort of like not only do we need to recognize the financial climate has changed, so strategies that used to work, go out and get a job for a good company and work hard and then retire, we've got to have a different thing. And I'm excited to find out some of your research because obviously your quality life plan is going to show us a way to deal with today's economic structure and still come out a winner.
Well, it does, and it just going. Where would you like me to go from here, Ken?
Well, my goodness, I don't know. How about, of course, you studied with Buckminster Fuller, so help maybe share a little bit about how he's influenced your work.
All right. Well, and then maybe I can talk about some of the strategies. I'm sure people would like to hear that.
Yeah, that's probably, well, you can get to that right away.
Sure.
We can talk about Bucky later.
Okay.
Practical advice first.
Yeah, just the quick thing about Buckminster Fuller I can just say is that he got me to look at life differently. He got me to understand systems. And so my encouragement to the everyday American is to start thinking for themselves. Think bigger. Look bigger. And a system will tell you the whole story about something. So that's what I did about money, and, you know, this is my results. And so going on to the steps, which is the practical information that everybody wants to know, my first two steps are, the first one is about wealth, and I mentioned that to you, about reconsidering wealth in its full definition. Then after that, my second step is about actually taking people through what the Federal Reserve has called themselves money mechanics. And this is the systems aspect of money. There is a fractional reserve banking system that's in operation. I'm not going to go into the details of that. It's You can find links to it on my website, my one website, which is called alternativefinancialnow.com. And if you go to links and resources, there are some free links there that can take people to the details of this information. The fractional reserve banking system started with the Federal Reserve Bank in 1913. And just to simplify it, what it does is it means that most money comes into existence, 95% of it, at the time it's loaned. So money, only 5% of it is actually printed by the government. 95% of it comes into existence when you go and purchase a mortgage, okay?
Yes.
So that is, so in other words, money is debt. That's the essence of this second step, is you have to learn something new about money to have my strategies make sense. And number one is about wealth and the full definition of it and how important it is to be able to live your life so that personal and spiritual well-being are the foundation of your wealth, so that when you accumulate things, you're not cutting yourself short in terms of the quality of your life, your family, and who you are and what you really want to accomplish. Secondly is understanding something new about money, which is that money is actually debt. And the way it works is that when it's borrowed, then the bank needs to keep a maximum of 10%. It's called the reserve requirement in the bank. And then they can loan out 90% of against what you borrowed. And like I said, it gets complicated. But the point is that because of this process of fractional reserve banking, money becomes worthless in its printing. And the majority of it comes into existence when it's borrowed. And all money has to be returned with interest. So that interest that you have to pay on, let's say, a loan that you got, even a personal loan, that interest gets added to your principal, and interest gets added onto the cost of goods and services that people charge. So that's why, in the aggregate, the CPI doesn't tell the whole story about our inflation. We're seeing an exponential rise in the cost of goods and services based on interest debt service being added to our basic costs and services of food, clothing, education, all of those things, housing. So that's the second step, is learning that. And I go into it, I've really broken it down so that people can wrap their minds around it. Once you begin to see that process of fractional reserve banking devalues currency over time, then I take people to step three, which is to really see what's happening in the world today. The statistics, I mean, it's in the paper all over the place, but I really lay it on thick because I want people to see that there's a trend here. This is happening on all different fronts. Everything from housing to education to food costs, incomes not meeting general expenses, basic life expenses. And my step four is helping people to see what their main obstacles are to making this work for them. And I learned this one, Ken, because of working with clients. And I'd start showing people how it worked and what it meant, could mean to them. And the issues that would come up for people had to do with what other people would think of them if they didn't have all the same stuff that someone else did, and all the things and all the emotional compensation that's involved in consuming. So understanding that many people consume things as a substitute for love and acceptance, and they'll buy a new dress when they have 20 in the closet because it makes them feel good. So it's understanding these obstacles, or they won't, they don't want to face the fact that they really can't afford a new car because their next door neighbors or their family expects them to get a new car every 2 years. So these are the main obstacles. They have to do with what we think other people will think of us if we don't keep up the pretense, basically, of doing well even when behind closed doors our bills are just stacking up and it's damaging our personal lives.
Yeah.
So that's a really... Yeah, so it's really significant for people to work with that obstacle because it's sort of invisible. It doesn't really come up until, for example, I was working with a marketing professional and his PhD wife, and he wanted to start a business, and he didn't want all the expenses and the time involved with maintaining his home, and he wanted to rent for a while to be able to establish his business and focus on it. And the wife's comment was, well, what do we tell our family? What do I tell my parents? Even though it was going to be a hardship for them to maintain the house and keep the overhead for him to build his business, it was more important to maintain her image with her parents. So, do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not just people aren't making those decisions all the time based on their own personal needs. There can be other factors influencing them, the neighbors, the family, the community, the society.
Right.
Boy, that gets complicated.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it isn't complicated, but I'm saying that if you don't address those issues, then they will trip you up every time in terms of putting your life on an even keel so that you might be able to live life on your own terms and not have to just march to the step of, the credit card companies. You know?
Yeah, so we're breaking free of not just a monetary system, but you're talking about really some powerful social influences in taking control of our financial lives, of really reclaiming our quality of life through your quality of life
plan. And it's because, go ahead.
To a website, I don't know if people, you also want them to know about your website,
www.qualitylifeplan.com. Thequalitylifeplan.com.
Oh, is it The Quality Life Plan?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. www.thequalitylifeplan.com. Thequalitylifeplan.com.
That's right.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh well, please, would you mention a little bit about what's available to people by going to that website?
Sure, and they can go to that website, and I've set it up so that a person can, for as little as $5, actually, they can take the online seminar of my book by, you know, paying as little as $5, or that they have an option. That's the way I've set it up because I wanted to make it available to people. So that way they can have access to my entire book online. The other thing they can do there is on the landing page when they scroll down, they can click and purchase my soft cover book, which has just been published, or they can also publish my PDF version of the book. So there's those three different ways to read the content of what we're discussing.
Oh, fabulous. Wow.
Yeah.
Sharing wisdom and making it affordable.
Well, I want people to get the information. That's the first step, because I really can't help a person or a family until they read the book. Until they get the information themselves, because my concepts are a 180 degrees from what their family and their financial advisors are telling them. So once they read the book, then we can have further discussions. Then I might be able to help them more directly. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once a person addresses their obstacles, moving on the steps, that's step four, and they admit, you know, that they're going to have to confront their sister who, you know, spends her money this way, and they're realizing, this family who's doing the quality life plan realizes that they need to cut cut out, maybe completely eating out for a period of time. And what's that, how is that going to be? How are they going to tell their friends and their family that? So those are the kind of issues that they're going to have to work with and have conversations about. And my hope is that as more and more people read this, that there'll be support groups so the people can talk with each other about these issues.
Ah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can currently do that on your website, what, through blogging and different methods?
Well, right now they can email me. If there's a demand for that, my website, the alternative financialnow.com website, has the ability to set up forums. I'm just waiting until there's a demand for it, because I would really like to see people being able to be anonymous, because most people don't like to be known for what's really going on with their financial life, to be able to discuss these things and learn from other people, learn from each other.
Sure.
But they can...
That's going to make a whole difference in really rebuilding community, where people don't have to hide out. They can be rallying around a better way of living. And
so I hope so. I would like that. Until that time, you know, a person can also email me at susan@alternativefinancialnow.com. And I'm happy to get back to people. Now, after that, my steps 5, 6, and 7 are change the way you spend, change the way you earn, and put it all together. So the step 5 is changing the way you spend. And to begin doing that, people first have to see where they are. Interestingly enough, Ken, most people don't even know how much they spend every month. And this is a really, you know, this is, if there was any tip I would leave your listeners with, it would be this. Get a really clear picture of how much goes out every month and how much goes in, comes in. And notice that. I dare say that many people don't want to know, because intuitively they know that they're spending more than they're earning.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is a really, really important first step.
Well, I mean, can't we keep doing that? I mean, the government is running on an increasing deficit, so can't we do that too?
Well, yes, you can. And what that means is that you'll need to have increasing amounts of credit and debt. And basically, you won't be able to call the shots in your own life anymore, because you'll be, you know, you'll be dancing to the tune of the credit card companies and the corporations that you work for. You won't have a say over, you know, what you want your life to be, because you'll be paying for the past for the rest of your life.
Wow.
So
there was what is it to talk about that subject? Andy Russo did a film about Wake Up that was talking about the Federal Reserve System and the income taxes, and I believe in that he made mention that currently, if he's accurate, all the money that people pay for their income taxes is going to service the debt, our national debt.
That's my understanding. Mm-hmm.
That we think we may be paying our taxes, our income taxes, to help with the defense or schools or some good program. And since the Federal Reserve came in, all of that money that we pay, and many people, if I'm understanding correctly, can be paying a third or more of their income for the taxation, and that's going to pay for this debt.
Yeah.
On the debt. So we're paying for that, and then we have our own credit interest to pay. Wow. That's got to end that.
Yeah, so if you look at out into the future at the way things are going, is that people will continue to have their expenses will continue to outpace their earnings. They will continue to need more credit and therefore have more debt, and therefore will have less and less ability to live life on their own terms. We can see this in particular with our young people coming out of university, or the cost of a college education has increased 250% since 30 years ago. 250%.
Huh.
And the majority of them of students are coming out with a debt of $50,000 to start out. So
yeah.
A lot of these young people, they can't just live their ideals. They have to go work for some corporation or even take a job completely out of their field of study to make sure they can pay their loan.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's talk about, gosh, when Bush was running for president and other politicians, we keep being told things are fabulous. We're the best country in the world. Everything is wonderful. We've got all this abundance and prosperity.
What I tell people is that the reason that we hear that is because you have to know who's saying that. And who's saying that is a financial industry that benefits by us believing it.
Yeah.
It's a marketing strategy, you know? And it's such a huge market. It's such a huge industry. The financial industry and banking industry is so huge that it's that we think of it more like the air we breathe. We don't even think of it as an industry, a corporate industry that has its own profits as primary interest, you know? Whereas we'll think about that in regards to Walmart right off the top. We won't think about that when we think about the financial industry. And
yeah.
So, you know, we're told those things that will keep us consuming because 70% of our gross national product is based on consumer purchasing. It's 70%. So we're fed a certain line of thinking, a certain line of thought, and it's been the only game in town. I'm a voice in the wilderness, basically. And many people might take issue with me, but I just say to them, do your own research. That's what I did.
Sure. Now I want to pause to open up our phone lines.
Good.
Because there can be some people out there that have some questions for you, so let me give those numbers out. In the United States, you can call into the show at 877-876-5227. If you're up in Canada, you could call in at 888-815-9756. Or if you're outside of the U.S. and Canada, use 530-876-3222. And let's get back to Susan, where we can go learn more about her at the website thequalitylifeplan.com or alternativefinancialnow.com. And go ahead, Susan, you were giving more information about these steps and that are going to help free our lives up.
Sure. So changing the way you spend, first of all, has to do with becoming aware of how you're spending, really getting that clear in writing. And then one of the first steps that I have my clients do is start the process of stopping using credit and paying off their credit cards. Now, that's said quickly, but that's can be a longer process than people would like because they have overextended themselves, you know. So the whole idea here in terms of spending is learning how to live within your means again and what it'll take to do that. And there's a lot that it takes to do that in the 21st century that's different than 50 years ago even. So the whole idea is to be able to only spend what comes in. What goes out is spent because it's come in. And we've learned this whole debt leveraging system, which is, you know, spend what you don't have today and pay for it tomorrow. Now, again, that benefits those who have designed those products.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's strategies out there that talk about basically using other people's money or taking debt money to make different investments. And so if you have to pay interest of 8, 10, 12%, whatever interest, and you can make an investment where you're earning 18, 19, 20, 25%, that they're suggesting that that's a wise way to operate.
I know.
And I'm just wondering.
And theoretically, it sounds like it makes sense. But I know too many people for whom have taken the bait on these things that end up really hurting. I don't know about you.
Right. And now, are you indicating that sometimes people are thinking they're going to make a profit on their investments, and many times they're not? Is that kind of the essence of what you're in?
Yeah. It's speculation, number one. Number two, when we're talking about the stock market, for example, you know, this has nothing to do with real money. Even if your stock goes up, it's just numbers on a computer. Until you convert that money and pay the conversion fees and your, the person I forget the name of the person who, you know, your stockbroker or the person who's helped you set this up, until you do all that, it's just numbers on a computer. And that's the whole debt leveraging model is, okay, then take those numbers on the computer and then roll them over into this investment. And what I'm saying is that people are doing that, but they're using credit cards to pay for their groceries.
Mm.
It's backwards. People are being led down the primrose path, ultimately. It's not going to lead them where they want to go. It's a, it has a lot of agreement. And like I said, I know I'm a voice in the wilderness. It has a lot of agreement. But, you know, I know people who have done that. They take their money and they put them in investments, and now they're considering bankruptcy. I have a, you know, I know someone specifically that I'm thinking about there. So, you know, again, you have to look at who's benefiting by promoting all of this. And what it's doing is it's pulling the rug out from people's stability. It's destabilizing people's lives. My program helps people to stabilize over the long term. The traditional way of thinking about all these things that we've discussed, earning and spending and saving and investing, it's destabilizing people's lives. Just like what I'm saying, people will be playing in the stock market and then using their credit card to pay for their groceries. It's what's wrong with this picture, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in other words, if I'm understanding, you want us to get back to a place where we're paying off the debt and basically remanaging our lifestyle so that we can afford what we have, and then build up cash flow
right
from there.
Right.
And then it's from that excess, rather than borrowed money, to
right.
possibly make investments.
That's right. That's exactly true. My model is a cash flow model as opposed to the traditional nest egg model. There are different ways of thinking. And so by people, I use the analogy of the change the way you spend. It's like a tree. You need to prune yourself back. A tree that's gone out of control, or a plant, this wonderful lilac plant that we have in our backyard, got all out of control. We had to prune it back so it could grow stronger again. So there's a pruning back that has to happen at the spending level so that people can then be strong, take a direction, do things in their own terms, you know, and begin to build a cash flow so that they're paying for their future and the life they want, not paying for the past and doing things that they have to do to be able to do that. You know, it's a form of slavery from my perspective, where the direction that we're headed, you know, as opposed to personal freedom. Personal freedom meaning being able to determine what you want your life to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's with excessive debt, that doesn't really allow that, and I'm not familiar with all the details, but I'm hearing statistics that there's more and more bankruptcies going on, so that's an indication that people's financial lives aren't working well enough, or they wouldn't be being forced into bankruptcies.
Yeah, and foreclosures, too. In fact, Colorado, where you are, is one of the top states for foreclosures. I don't know if you know that or not.
Oh.
It's been number two for quite a while. You know, Sun Microsystems and IBM and then all the layoffs and overdevelopment, houses standing empty, people losing their jobs. It's foreclosures are way off the charts right now. That's the other thing, you know. People have been led to believe they could pay mortgages that they really couldn't afford once they factored in their insurance and taxes and maintenance. And I think I told you before the show, my friend in Canada told me that up there in Vancouver, people are paying 70% of their after-tax money on home expenses, which include mortgage, taxes, insurance, and maintenance. That's unbelievable. 70% of their after-tax money, which means that they're having to use credit a lot to buy the kids' clothes, to go to the dentist, to buy their groceries, like I was saying. So there's a kind of a common sense getting back to basics that has to happen, and it's not because it's a good idea, and it's not even because it's moral. I'm not going there. I'm wanting people to see that the way that the monetary system works means that if you don't do something different, you're going down a road that you may not want to go. And then at a certain point, you won't be able to turn it around because you'll be so indebted that you won't have the options to reverse the process. So it's not just a moral issue. It's really about understanding the way the system works. And that's where Bucky Fuller comes in. There's a systemic aspect here that we're not taught. It's underreported. It's overlooked for reasons that benefit those who profit from us, basically. So,
yeah. Now, one of the things, so I guess if you had just one tip that you could give our listeners today for succeeding with their finances, what would you suggest?
Well, it would be the combination of get clear on how much goes out and how much comes in. Stop using credit. And if you have to have one credit card, which you don't really need because debit cards will take care of it in most parts of the United States anyway, if you need one credit card, keep it in the freezer in water so that if you're going to use it, you have to think about it. You have to thaw it out because this credit card has turned people minds into this instant gratification notion about most everything. So if it's frozen, you have to think about it. And that's where I'm taking people, is start to think about these things and where the big picture is and where it's leading you to progress along this progressively more credit type of path, which is being encouraged. You're being led to be a loyal customer of the financial industry for the rest of your life. And so that's what I would say.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I invite, and obviously, I don't know if it's in your book or on your website, but you do have a few stories of people that have followed your advice and are doing quite well, I hope.
Yes, there are people. I have an example of someone in my book, and I have some testimonials on my website.
Okay, so so we know it's not fanciful rambling here, that this sounds like kind of old-fashioned good sense, that the way my dad talked about handling things and making purchases when they could be afforded and feeling satisfied with what one had.
Could I give you an example of a client?
I'd love to hear it.
I won't say anyone's names, but I had lived in the Southern California area, and I had a married couple who were fairly high profile in the entertainment industry. They lived in a home that was worth over $1 million, and yet they hired me. Most people would think, oh, these people, I want to be like them, you know?
Yeah.
And yet when we sat down and looked at everything, they had the same issues that the more everyday American has, but just at a higher order in terms of, you know, numbers of credit cards and, you know, spending more than they earned. And they really were some of my most disciplined clients. You probably wouldn't even believe that, but they really worked the program and turned things around in such a way that they, you know, reestablished their financial base and started generating cash in new ways, cash flow, I should say, in new ways. That was, you know, very heartening to me as their coach and to them. You know, they have been very happy. So it's not even just the what we think as the middle class overextended family. It's even people in these higher echelons of money who are wanting to have another way of dealing with their personal finances. So,
wow,
that's a true story.
Oh, that's impressive. Now, the people are still being told a lot about real estate as a good investment beyond just owning one's home. What's your opinion on that?
Well, my opinion on that is that it's really based on if they have a strong, stable foundation. Everyone's situation is different. And like I said, many people are going towards investing, like this other person that I told you about, before they have a really strong cash flow coming in, one that can sustain them over time, work they enjoy and has some meaning for them. They will take their money and invest. And so I always tell people they first need to create a foundation. And that's a little bit different for each person because each person's situation is unique.
Oh, okay. So first things first.
Is to
build a decent financial structure of what you would call someone's career before they're doing a lot of investing.
I would. And it's speculation, you know. It's debt leveraging again. And I'm not saying don't do it because some people are truly in a position where it makes sense. But the majority of people are in a position where it doesn't make sense is what I've seen. But they've been led by the mortgage industry and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to think that they should be able to do it and can do it, and then they end up with major problems. So.
Wow. Well, we certainly remind people, would you, because there's some ways for our listeners to learn more about what you're talking about. Would you help remind us of how we can find this out?
Sure. They can go to my website, www.thequalitylifeplan.com, where they can take my online seminar, or they can click to purchase my soft cover book or a PDF version of my book, or they can go to www.alternativefinancialnow.com, where there's a lot more information and links and things of that nature, as well as if they click on products, they can purchase the book there as well.
Oh, okay. Well, this is good, and this will be exciting. And then next week, I don't know if you're acquainted with our guest for next week, Jan Jansen.
No.
Okay. Anyway, this is going to be a seasoned pro that is going to help people to grow and start their own businesses. And so I think the two of you, by our listeners hearing you this week and going to your website, thequalitylifeplan.com, and then tuning in next week to listen to Jan Jansen, we're going to be giving some more information, because a lot of people are going to be reevaluating how do they get a solid financial structure.
Right.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we are here to help. And Susan, I want to thank you so much for spending what to me is some great quality time with you. And I know of tremendous benefit to my listeners. I will personally be going through your book and implementing those programs because I see the wisdom of it. And my beloved listeners out there, I invite you to take a closer look at her work and tune in each week as we continue to find more and more ways to support you. And when you have time, go visit advancedliving.com. I continue to add more things to the website to support your quality of life. In the meantime, I am just grateful to you, Susan, and to our BBS radio station that brings this to us, and wish all of you a blessed, happy week. And we get to celebrate before our next show, independence of our country. So let's have some financial independence to go with it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Ken.
You're welcome. Thank you, Susan. Goodbye for now.
Do you know where your planets are? Hi, I'm Debs the Horoscopes Lady, and every Wednesday morning right here on BBS Radio at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, I'll be answering your career and relationship questions using the Sidereal Difference. What's that? Tune in and find out every Wednesday morning to Debs the Horoscopes Lady.
Numerology is a system of ancient codes found in our birth information that gives insight to the lessons we each must learn in this lifetime. Elizabeth Summers is a medium and esoteric numerologer offering her knowledge of ancient wisdoms to help fellow travelers towards a more enlightened and peaceful path. Join her now for the magical world of numbers.
Soul and chord progression, too. I think there's something magical about that.
Well, you know, it's the most harmonic chord.